Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. I'm very excited to have a wonderful guest today. Her name is Dawn Brunke. Some of you know her. I think she's been on this show before. We've certainly talked a few times. She has written marvelous books about dreaming and animal communication. And her new book is a very important one. It comes out of very moving and tragic circumstances in her life. She lost her beloved husband, Bob, 18 months or so ago, just shy of his 61st birthday. But one of the things that happened, which helped bring her through and from which we can all learn and be inspired, is that not long after he passed, suddenly Bob appeared to her and started talking to her. So she has written a book called Talks with Bob. And I love the simplicity of the title. I love the simplicity of the proposition. I love the evident authenticity and truth of what she's telling us. And let me just say before we bring her on how very important this is. I mean, it's very important for us to have some conception of what happens after death and indeed before birth. Yeats said something like that. It's desirable to know a little bit about what happens before birth, a little bit about what happens after death, when we go into the realm, Dawn tells us, of the after living, the life beyond life. There's all the difference in the world, by my observation, between those of us who have a direct impression, a direct experience, certain knowledge, from our point of view anyway, that there's life beyond life and those who don't. I mean, we can take things on faith, we can take things on trust, we can take hand-me-down accounts of these things. It's really all so important that we need direct experience and confirmation. How do we get that? We get that by going there, and actually we might do that any night of the week in our dreams, even if we don't know what's going on. We might do it through the extremity of a near-death experience, which many people now talk about, and certainly I've been through, and I think Dawn has been through also. And or we might do it because we have direct contact, reliable, verifiable contact with those who are resident on the other side and can talk firsthand about their experiences. So these are all very good reasons for listening very carefully for what Dawn has to tell us, which, amongst other things, is going to confirm that our relations with our beloved can survive the apparent separation of death. Even though it might be sad not to have them in the physical body, we can be close to them in other ways. Dawn, welcome.
Oh, Robert, thank you so much. Wonderful to talk with you again like this.
Well, it is. Well, to tell us, take our listeners who may not yet know anything of you or this story, take us through the beginnings of what led you to write the book Talks with Bob. Bob, tell me about what happened in the wake of his sudden death, and how you became certain that you were together on, as you put it, a bridge of connection between the worlds.
Yes, it really was a bridge of connection. The way it started was very subtle, yet organic. The very day he died that evening, I sensed his presence in my house, in the corner near a lamp, and it's just, I was in a state of shock, and I didn't really know what that was, but I felt comforted. And a couple days later, I was walking around a lake, and I felt him close to me whispering in my ear, "I'm in your heart." And my daughter was with me on the walk. She was a little ahead of me, and I called her back, and she said, "I felt that too." So early on, there was confirmation from others and from different signs. You know, he kind of appeared one time as a rainbow. It was just a sudden knowing that he had influenced this, for me to see that rainbow at just that moment. And it disappeared fairly quickly. So, you know, things happen, and birds in the sky, or the way a cat turned and looked at me. There's all these subtle signs that began. And coinciding with that was my spending time in the early morning after sleep, after dreams, not quite waking up, in that liminal state between realms, and sharing thoughts with Bob. It wasn't like I was asking him to. He was just present. And I started getting a sense of the afterlife and of what was going on with him. We began to share dreams. And in that early morning, we began to converse, just back and forth. Again, it was very natural. You know, being a writer, as soon as I got up, I wanted to type that down. I wanted to make a record of it. And this eventually evolved, I would say, just within a couple of weeks, to the point where I would just, as a matter of fact, get up, have my coffee, sit down at my laptop, and begin conversing with Bob. I would type everything in. As to how that works, it wasn't so much, it wasn't anything like automatic writing, or I don't even consider it channeling so much. I consider it opening myself, my mind, my being, to kind of tuning in with Bob and sensing his presence, and just a very natural back and forth conversation happened. I should also mention that I do have a background in animal communication. So, you know, some 25 years tuning into animals and people and being a translator. So I think that formed a foundation for me, in which this communication could happen very easy, very seamlessly. And we just began communicating every day, talking, and so I had records every day of our conversations, some of which were just so fascinating to me. And I just also want to comment what you said in the beginning is that, you know, this is not a how-to book. He and I talked about this, and he proposed the idea, maybe this is a project for you, maybe this is a book. And something we really wanted to convey to readers isn't, you know, it's not a how-to, it's an experiential book. So, and there is very much a bridge present between Bob and myself. So I think simply by reading the book, readers can kind of come along, and they might hear the smaller story of Don and Bob, but it's also a larger story of connection and of there not needing to be this held perception of a separation between realms, but rather a softening of that and an opening to that that everyone really can access and have communication with those who have passed over. Yeah.
That's a wonderful introduction. Thank you, Dawn. Yes, it's not a how-to book, and thank you for not giving us another one. I mean, there's a case to be made for how-to books, but you and I both, as storytellers, understand the power of a story in its own right for its own sake. I mean, you're going to inspire people because the story is simple, it feels right, it feels true, it's about things we desperately want to know, like the fact that the apparent barrier of death doesn't prevent us from having communication, exchanging love, healing and forgiveness when they're required, and giving each other mutual support. And you do this simply by telling your story. And it starts in ways that people can pick up on and apply without needing how-to instructions. For example, the time that you spend in what I like to call the half-dream state, in that twilight state between sleep and awake in the morning when you know, you're not out of bed with your coffee quite yet, but you're lingering, you're drifting. That, as you and I both know, is prime time for spiritual psychic encounters. And it's been recognized as such in many traditions for as far back as we can trace. For me, all my life, I'd say it's sometimes really been the most creative space. It might be in the morning, it might be in the middle of the night, in between periods of sleep. It might be at the onset of sleep. But actually, the morning state is a very propitious one for discoveries, for creative breakthroughs, and all the rest of it. And then out of that, here we get dawn at dawn, as you said that Bob talked about you, dawn at dawn. Now you've got your laptop, and you're taking down the communications, and you're not taking dictation. you're having a conversation. And you have enough evidence in the truth of your feelings and also in confirmation coming from signs that are popping up in the world around you and impressions from other people, certainly your daughter, you feel solid. I mean, you feel this isn't just a projection. Mm-hmm. This isn't just wishful thinking. This is mm-hmm. Bob spending time with you because he can and he wants to, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. That's exactly so. Yeah.
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 And, you know, it's been going on for some time now. I gather it's still going on. It's going on every day or more occasionally now.
Yeah. I would say, you know, several times a week for sure. And he's great. He's become a great sounding board and problems in my life. I go to Bob and he's very helpful. Yeah.
That's a question I wanted to ask you actually. Has he been able to come through for you and give you practical guidance or assistance or alerts about things that were actionable, you know, in ordinary life, could help you through different issues that might have come up?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And, you know, it's interesting because I look back. I mean, I've printed everything out. I have quite a few notebooks of our conversations. One of the things that comes out so much is trust, to trust ourselves, to trust life. Trust what's happening. He also is very much a proponent of really kind of looking at our shadow stuff, at what he calls the cave of the subconscious, right? So the things that we hold on to are our belief systems that are maybe outdated or small-minded thoughts or ways of doing things. He calls me on those oftentimes. And I'm a person who thinks I've done a lot of shadow work, but he brings up things that I see in my life that I'm holding and that are causing the angst, right? And he always says, let's, you know, deep and down, feel what that is. And one of the things he said to me at one point is, if he had any advice for the living, it would be that, to look at the things that hold us, that prevent us from having a more joyful, expansive life. Because those are the things he dealt with in the afterlife and that he needed to deal with. It's not to say that everybody in the afterlife will. You know, he always told me from the very beginning, every afterlife is unique, fitting that individual, their belief systems, their thoughts, their culture, etc. So it's experienced in many different ways by different people. But for him, and it's surprising because he was not this way in physical life. He really kind of didn't want to look at his stuff. But now in the afterlife, he has been, and he's cleared so much of it, and I've really been witness to his him evolving, expanding. You know, his insights becoming much more wise and much more open and much more compassionate of others. So
this is great. So here's a question I'm really. Dying, wrong word probably. I'm really eager to ask you. How much of a sense do you have, how much of an impression do you have of how his life is evolving, you know, beyond the times when he's talking to you? I mean, is he going through transitions? What's he doing? Mm-hmm. What's he learning?
Mm-hmm.
Who's he with? How's he spending the rest of, I know the time doesn't work for him the way it does for people down here, but how is he spending the rest of his beyond time?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. It was for me, too. And in the very beginning, he did very kind of practical things. He was, before he died, he was supposed to go on a hunt 2 days later. And in his afterlife, he did that. He went on a hunt. And it wasn't killing animals. It was connecting with them at different levels. That's a whole story unto itself. But I just say it as it was one level of his way of perceiving the afterlife. From there, he started talking about, you know, meeting family and friends, his guides. He was really fascinated with talking with other afterlifers, as he called them, you know, hearing about their death, their perception of the afterlife, the things they would do. He also talked about going to different scenarios or actually kind of creating different scenarios, you know, jungle scenes, underwater scenes. He and I were both scuba divers, so he did a lot of underwater stuff. And so he talked about this initial introductory phase of the afterlife as one that was necessarily connected with Earth. So most of the people there that he talked with, most of the beings he talked with there, had connections to Earth. They remembered their stories. They remembered their lives. Some were able to communicate with those of us still physical, and some not. From there, he felt a need to go beyond that, you know, to go to another realm. And he went to, for him, it was envisioned as climbing a mountain, a kind of a snowy, you know, mountain, a tall mountain, and he had different encounters there. And at that point in time, we really had just said goodbye to each other. It was sort of like he was like, I need to go on now, and I accepted that. And yet the next morning, when I got up, I was in the habit of opening my laptop and typing, and I did. And it was surprising to both of us that we were able to still connect. And so I was privy to his whole journey up the mountain and down. And a lot of times what he was experiencing had a parallel with what I was experiencing. So in a way, I would say we were evolving in a similar way, you know, at a similar rate. And we were definitely helping each other. After that mountain adventure, he came back to the introductory world, and he said that he wanted to still communicate with me, that that was something that we were doing as a project to help others, that we were building a bridge between realms, and that he was going to be working as a guide there and helping others adjust as the newly departed coming in and helping them adjust to their story and to perceiving what was happening. So that's kind of where he still is right now, is more in that introductory phase, even though he could be going to other places if he wanted. But that's where he's choosing to be right now.
Well, that's very, very interesting information. I mean, I think that we all, after death, probably are going to travel in the direction of our wishes and desires and travel according to our imagination or lack thereof. Sounds that he's got himself a pretty good path for now, still in contact with you.
Yeah.
Still able to enjoy things of this earth that he enjoyed in a reality that is close to the physical reality, but not necessarily identical. And maybe actually
right.
Beginning to grow, sometimes your participation from what I've read and heard from you, beginning mm-hmm. to grow some imaginal environments, you know, that mm-hmm. go beyond the physical, but are still influenced by one's knowledge of the physical world. So the building materials are still based. Somebody that I know on the other side who showed me his transitions in an interesting way referred to a phase that he wants to call memory dream. One word, memory dream. A memory dream, a state in which actually people are engaged, according to their imagination, in some reality creation. But they're drawing very much, you know, on their physical memories of Earth life. So it hasn't gone far from what they remember and bring with them. Very, very.
Yeah, and you know, if I can just interject here, what Bob, you know, in the beginning he talked about time being stretchy and kind of, you know, different in
stretchy
that realm.
Time.
And at one point, he talked about time as a wave. And he was saying this, it reminds me of what you're saying here, this memory dream of riding a wave. So he would remember maybe a point of time in his physical life, and we'll be able to ride with that and kind of be immersed in that and sometimes be able to shift that, to shift it into a different way, maybe a gentler, softer way of being and kind of creating a new reality, a new timeline. So that was also really fascinating that imaginal realm. Well, as you know, we connect with our alternate selves, our concurrent alternate selves. And just simply via talking or simply via connecting, we can influence one another. We can help one another. We can expand our consciousness by the very act of doing so. Yeah?
Yes. I mean, you have written about Bob seeming to meet with multiple souls. And in one of the sort of tent experiences, he's got a magical tent where he meets other people.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be full of Bobs at different ages, including much younger ages, and it seems as if the older Bob, the Bob who is now on the other side, is able to be a central figure, a sort of oversoul, a mentor to all of them. Is
mm-hmm.
that an accurate description of your impression?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, you know, using the term loosely, an oversoul. So seeing his different age selves. And Bob was always telling me, and this, again, nothing that he would ever said in physical life, but he would always say, we're such a collection of selves. We're not really one self. We're a collection of selves. Each of those selves has its own reality, its own thoughts and feelings, and its own timeline. And that sometimes those timelines can shift, right? Sometimes they go different places. And so I think a lot of what that tent experience was, meeting and talking with and being with his other selves, was a kind of multidimensional integration of selves, a much larger knowing of who this being called Bob was, and his potentials, not only in life, but in afterlife, right, which can
It takes us so deep, Dawn, you know. I mean, of course, in some mm-hmm. traditions, there is no self, as we talk about in the mm-hmm. West. I mean, in Buddhism, there's no self the way we talk about it. There's no unitary self the way we talk about it. We are a house or a hostel or a guest house full of different personalities mm-hmm. coming and going. Kierkegaard said, if I remember it accurately, that the self is something that is forever in process of becoming. self is not static, it's in process of becoming. So Bob's discoveries about this, I mean, are very interesting and go to the heart of practical philosophy, in other words, the philosophy that we live rather than just theorize about. All right, we've gone in deep and fast. We're going to take a short break. We're talking to the wonderful Dawn Brunke about a wonderful new book, Talks with Bob. You're going to want to read this. We're going to find out. You can find it at all the usual suspects online and so on. We'll also get to Dawn's website and so on after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Nuss.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. I can't recommend highly enough Dawn Brunke's new book, Talks with Bob, about her amazing journey with her departed and beloved husband, who died suddenly around the autumn equinox, as I recall, in 2024. Mm-hmm. I've been sharing things together in a way that is inspiring, moving, and encouraging for all of us who might be liberated from the idea that death is an impermeable barrier. We understand mm-hmm. in Dawn's story and its truth and its simplicity and its practical wisdom that we can remain connected to our departed in ways that are mutually helpful. Dawn, you have a website. What is it?
My website is animalvoices.net.
Okay, and she is and has been an animal communicator, has produced wonderful books out of that in the past. Dawn, let's just think for a moment about all the people who will be fascinated by your experience and yet, in a way, sad that they have had nothing similar. There are lots of people who would love to be in contact with beloved friends and family members who have passed but really have not had direct experience. I remember a man who came to me many years ago who'd spent 3 years trying to get in touch with his departed wife. He's a one-woman man. And he spent 3 years. He tried all sorts of approaches, mediums, all sorts of things. He hadn't had direct contact and hadn't had a dream. That changed in a day of shamanic dreaming with me, but he spent 3 years. I remember his joy after he found her and got a message which he could live with. But he spent 3 years intensely trying to reach her and find her and couldn't do it. What would you say to people who are inspired by you but are not sure how to approach this?
Yeah, that's a question that comes up actually in animal communication, too. There's a desire to do it, but there's a feeling that we can't, and that's really the obstacle, is the feeling or the belief system that we can't do this. So I think my best answer is to soften a little bit and to consider that, okay, maybe I can do this. I don't know how it's going to happen. Maybe I'm going to see a cloud in the sky or a rainbow. Maybe an animal's going to come to me. Maybe somebody is going to say something that my wife said or that my husband said, and it's going to resonate in me. There's so many different creative ways that we can connect and commune with those on the other side. And, you know, there's a certain arrogance we have in thinking it has to come a certain way. I would say, relax. Gentle yourself, soften your heart, and just be open. I mean, it sounds so simple, and it is. It's just an opening. I will say that, you know, we wrote the book for that reason, for people to come along on that storyline and that on that adventure, and to kind of feel it in themselves. So there's a hope in me that the words resonate, not just in meaning, but in experience. Because I think, as you said at the beginning of the hour, you know, it's the experience that carries us into connection. It's our willingness to be open and to experience that allows that to happen. So I think advice for our times in general is to be gentle with ourselves and with others and to trust, right, to trust at deeper levels that this is possible, and that we invite it into our lives.
Right. Of course, dreaming is the easiest way, isn't it? I mean, dreaming is the most natural, the most frequent, the most common way for us to have connection with people who are not in the physical world, but may at the same time not be far away. So the problem is sometimes related, often related, to the fact that people are not in touch with their dreams. And indigenous traditions would say, well, if you're not in touch with your dreams, it's probably because you've lost connection with a part of your soul, the part of you which is quite at home in meeting and interacting with the departed, but that's not with you. Maybe it went away through what shamans call soul loss. Maybe life got cold and cruel, and part of you that is your beautiful dreamer checked out because it didn't like being around anymore, and maybe that is the root of the problem. Actually, I've noticed that that is quite often the root of the problem. There are things that can be done about that. But just to keep it on a colloquial level, I mean, if we could just encourage people to make a little more space for their dreams, for recollecting dreams, and make a little more time available for drifting in that half-dream state we were talking about, a lot of things are likely to reveal themselves.
Well, that's so true, and actually maybe that's a very practical thing to advise, is to stay open in that early morning and invite in conversation. And again, you know, we have a tendency in our world to be so hard-edged about how we want things to happen or how we think things should be. And again, I think softening and opening to that deeper self. In a way, what we're saying is all the same thing, whether it's a blocked animal communication or talking to, you know, a departed one or feeling like we can't connect with our dreams. It's all about deepening and kind of opening ourselves to our own deeper selves. Because once you're there, once you're in the depth of who you are, all of these things are possible. And they're not only possible, they're easy because we're connected, right? We're open to
connecting. I think that also, speaking of the animal communicator you are, and somebody who observes nature and lives with it as closely as you do, you're also reminding us to pay attention to what pops up in a dreamlike way, mm-hmm. in the way that a dream symbol mm-hmm. or sign might pop up through that shaft of sunlight coming down through the lake mist that you write about in your book, through that rainbow, through the behavior of those birds or animals. I mean, there's something in the world around you stirring in a way which might reflect the presence of the departed, a pattern of resemblance, a pattern of confirmation. So that's another thing to notice, too. I mean, how these mm-hmm. things might group mm-hmm. themselves together and give us a nod from the universe in that way. I mean, I sometimes suggest to people, again, keeping it very colloquial and very sort of family-oriented, I'll sometimes say, well, if you're really thinking about so-and-so, about your mother or your grandma or whoever it is, you could just set up a very simple, no-nonsense family altar. You put out a cup of tea or a glass of wine mm-hmm. or whatever they like, and you put out an object that matters to both of you, and you just perhaps imagine that they're there, and perhaps you imagine yourself starting a conversation and put down what comes to you. And it's amazing how actually right. quite a lot can come through that.
I so agree. It's what we do. And sometimes it almost feels whimsical or, you know, artful or, you know, it's just an act. What we do in the outer world does have an effect in the inner world and vice versa, right? I mean, we know that. And so we're connecting worlds when we do things like that with purpose, with intention, with desire. Yeah, it's an opening. We're opening ourselves to that inner world, and we're inviting. We're inviting.
Connecting yeah. worlds, that's a very good description of the theme of this conversation, Dawn, actually. We're going to take another break shortly. When we come back, I want to talk to you. I mean, this is perhaps a future book that you will write with Bob, and maybe with Bob as he will further evolve. I want to talk to you a bit about how our departed do go through various transitions, reach moments of choice. The stories are going to be different. And how sometimes someone who started out as a departed person you knew it can develop into a guide in a larger sense, and is not necessarily mm-hmm. the same in an individual. So this is we're talking about stages, maybe many years beyond where you and Bob are right now. I'd like to give you a couple of personal stories to comment on. Does that sound like a direction you might be willing to go in?
Of course.
All right. So let me note, just as we head towards the next break, that probably I'll talk to you when we come back about my favorite dead professor, and how he's been transitioning and transforming and even redescribing himself in his encounters with me. So, all right, I think we're ready for a break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. We're talking to the wonderful Dawn Brunke about her excellent book, Talks with Bob. I do recommend that you go get yourself a copy. You're really going to enjoy it. It's going to inspire and to move you.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. mossdreams.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
So, Dawn, I want to tell a story or two of my own. I've talked to you once or twice about my relations with departed family members. I want to talk about my relations with my favorite professor from my student days. Hey, a famous professor, Manning Clark, I might as well name him, Australia's best-known narrative historian, a very colorful character, a great friend and patron of mine as undergraduate, as graduate student, as a very precociously appointed lecturer in ancient history. And anyway, he died many years ago. And after his death, he started appearing to me. The first time he appeared was in the old-fashioned form of a telegram. I'm in a space like, I don't know, maybe like a common room for the academics at a university, and someone calls out, "There's a telegram for me on a bulletin board." And I go, and they're folded up. There's a telegram, which turns out to be much longer than any telegram I have ever seen, and we're already really beyond the telegram era. And in the dream, I start reading it, and I start coming out of the dream, and I'm still reading it, and now I'm recording it. You understand this kind of thing, because you spend time in similar liminal states. And it is a telegram from my dead professor. It goes on, pages of it, and it's in his distinctive voice. I'm able to transcribe pages of it. And before I finish transcribing, bang, I'm with him, sitting at a table where, on the Île Saint-Louis in Paris, which I know fairly well, I didn't know that he knew it, we're sitting in a bistro table, the Île Saint-Louis in Paris, and now we're having a face-to-face conversation. I won't go through the further details. I'm just noting that this was the first memorable encounter through a dream with someone who was a friend and advisor and patron of mine. I guess he had turned up in a few earlier dreams playing an advisory role, but now we are face-to-face in this indelible way in what is a hyper-lucid dream. And he's appeared many times since then, and he's shown me his transitions. He's shown me his work in some kind of Institute of Advanced Studies. We're studying parallel lives in the sense of lives connected to each other across time and space that turn on each other. So we're looking now at webs of connection, of different personalities who are influencing each other across time and space. And because he's a history professor, some of these people are quite well known in history. And the details don't matter to what I'm going to tell you. He turned up at the end of last winter, when I was feeling very confused about what I was doing, actually, because my situation, having published a certain number of books, is that I'm in danger of being overwhelmed by millions of unpublished works in drafts and folders. Where do you go and how do you get it together? And he turns up, and we walk on a beach, like an Australian white sand beach together, and he says, "Tell me what the theme of your writing and your research and your work is now." And I tell it to him in a way that is clearer than I could have managed in ordinary life. But in the dream, it's probably a lucid dream now, I tell him, and I basically start asking, "Well, who are you now? It's all these years since your death." I use the word I've never heard. I think it's a new word. He says, "Oh," eventually he says in the conversation, having made it clear he's no longer exactly the individual spirit of my dead professor. He's become something more. But it's also a bit different from just being the mask, just being the mask, just being the costume of a guide. It's something a bit different. It says, "Oh, I am a logophore." Well, my Greek's pretty non-existent, but logophore would mean a carrier of the word, a carrier of the logos, a carrier of what the knowledge that matters, a carrier of wisdom, logos, wisdom, the word. It's as if this is a term used for a certain kind of guide, with obviously a clear leaning towards, you know, scholarship and knowledge of that kind and so on. A very learned term, which is probably unlikely to become household language. It made me think how, you know, our departed may, as I say, as he was trying to indicate to me, may evolve into something more than they were. I mean, there's still a stamp of the original personality, but perhaps the earthly personality and what it became immediately after death have now fused with, joined with, something on a higher level. It's become a larger entity. Does that make some kind of sense to you?
Well, yes, that's wonderful. That's a great expansive story. I don't know that I can comment so much that Bob has experienced that, because he did make that choice to kind of stay right now in that
more introductory place.
But he did, Bob was always a great conversationalist in life, so he was always interested in other people's stories. And he did talk to various beings who would talk about adventures that they had prior to this afterlife. In other words, they would remember being in the afterlife through another incarnation, if that makes sense, and some of their experiences. And he did hear stories about, and again, these are just stories he heard, not his experiences, of beings going on not only to reincarnate, but to go into other realms, other dimensions or planets, and become other beings, guides in a larger sense, you know, than we would think of traditional guides in the afterlife. So yeah, and I remember one point, and this is just a little, just an interesting visual. At one time I was feeling kind of just not happy with things, and he knows I have a bend toward the metaphysical, right? So he goes, you know, there's these beings that find doorways in the night sky, and they just walk through those doorways into other realms. And it was just like one of those little fascinating images for me of how creative, you know, everything is. Our universe, our the expansive, multidimensional beingness of life is, that we can move into these other, you know, incarnations of being. And as your story indicated, you know, larger and larger and more expansive and more creative aspects of who we really are.
Huh? Oh, it's such a wonderful cinematic image, Dawn. I mean, it's got the makings of a great story or even a great episode of a TV series or something, these opening the night doors and stepping in and out of different worlds. I mean, maybe it's something that you will want to write or create from. Well, it obviously could fit in the books you're writing right now, but there would be other ways of playing it too, in a more fictional, fantastic way. It's just got so much exciting, original, fresh, cinematic quality. Really great. Great stuff. Great material here. I'm thinking now about something that happened in one of my long ago in-person workshops where I had a mother and daughter come. They said, we're here because we know Mom's going to pass sometime in the foreseeable future. We want to see whether we can construct or discover, one or the other, construct or discover a really nice place where we can get together after Mom dies. That's a great intention for coming to my workshop. By the end of the workshop, they had developed a cottage for Mom in non-ordinary reality, and a place they called the Moon Cafe, where they would be served the finest champagne or something better than champagne or tea or whatever they wanted. And they could meet. And after Mom passed, the daughter contacted me and said, we're meeting in the Moon Cafe. It all seems absolutely for real. And thank you for providing the space where we can grow this environment together. So I put another theme on the table, which is reality construction in a realm where imagination is the architect. We'll have to pause now for another break. We're talking to Dawn Brunke about what happens after death with the immense and wonderful first-hand knowledge of that she's receiving from her departed husband. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Knott.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You are listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Way of the Dream is all about what we can learn by developing the imagination, as well as by paying more attention to dreams and synchronicity. And Dawn Brunke, our wonderful guest, told me she has a story that might have something to do with reality creation in the realm of true imagination. You're on, Dawn.
I do, yes. It's just so funny you mention that story, because probably about 10 minutes before, I'd been thinking about the Moon Cafe. And I was in one of your classes in which you told us that story of the mother and daughter meeting at the Moon Cafe. And one time, I don't recall exactly when it was, maybe several months after he passed, I was telling Bob this story about meeting at the Moon Cafe. And he goes, oh, we should do that. And so I was, you know, yes, let's meet at the Moon Cafe. So the next morning, when I was still in bed, I hadn't got up yet to write the thing, but I just had that idea and that memory of the Moon Cafe, and there we were. And our Moon Cafe was a visual of being on the moon. It wasn't like we were in a restaurant. We had a little table, and he had placed it was so funny. Little luminous moons and little luminous stars all around. And if it was a little, you know, a special little Valentine's Day party with stars and moons, and we were sitting there talking, and I was just so touched by it, and it was connected in so many different ways to his love for me, my love for him, the reflection of, you know, of my work with dreams, my work with you, my work with books, and it just all came together in that imaginal realm as a way of meeting. And at the end, he goes, "We don't really have to meet here, you know." And I'm like, "I know. It was just for fun, right? It was just a fun place." So, on the one hand, you know, the Moon Cafe, as you describe it, is a place where various dreamers and beings between realms have come and met. So it acquires a presence, right? It acquires this weightiness in the imaginal realm as a real place. And yet we can also be creative with it and meet in our own ways. And it was just wonderful. It was a wonderful experience. And so I smiled that you brought that up. Yeah.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. That's lovely. Yes, of course we can play architects, imaginal architects, mm-hmm. in our own way. There are some environments that take on stability and last for thousands of years of human time, even though mm-hmm. in environments where time doesn't work the same way at all, because you know, a collective mindset stabilizes them and sustains them and so on, just as different god forms and religions are sustained on Earth. So you get collective belief systems, you get heavens and hells and purgatories and pure lands and other places with different names from different traditions, and they're solid, maybe as solid as anything on Earth, really, or near solid, because of the collective effort that's been put into creating and maintaining them. And then you get things that are somewhere in between what you and Bob did with your picnic table on the moon and the more formal, more formally established Moon Cafe, or maybe that's the example of the in-between state I want to talk about, where you get environments which are enjoyed and participated in by quite a few people. And they're not as solid as the heavens and hells and purgatories, but they have their own durability and stability.
Right.
Anyway, we are talking about the role, the central role, the key role of the imagination in the kind of reality that constitutes an afterlife environment. So much depends, as we've already discussed, on what you wish, what you desire, what you fear, on your courage or imagination, and on your ability to give it a go, you know, to see what the limits are and to push them a bit. So what we do in this life, in dreaming and in becoming more lucid about dreaming and in doing more with what comes through that half dream liminal state, is going to have a very direct bearing on what we find, what we inhabit, and what we enjoy or fail to enjoy when we've given up the physical body and operating in something else. So that's not to be funereal about it, just to say let's have as much fun as we can, whichever world we're in.
Yeah, and I would just like to circle that back to one thing that Bob did tell me about, you know, in his encounters with other afterlifers, that there were definitely architects and artists who would create these scenes, these scenarios, these environments for everybody to enjoy. And one of the interesting things, and he took me to a few, one was this a wonderful, like a pier, a very grand pier out into the water with a, you know, kind of a meeting place, a circular meeting place on the outside surrounded by water. And I was asking, you know, is this for everyone? And he said, yes, some of these creations are temporal within the context of the afterlife. So they're existing for a short time for people to benefit from, to use together, their community spaces, if you will. And other ones are more open. Some of them are a little bit more secretive. He took me to a jungle. You know, he goes, not many people come here because this is a special place and you kind of have to know how to get here. And then he also talked about places you would go to that were kind of like a general construct, right? Like a golf course or a park. And I remember a park he took me to, and there was like kind of a fog around it. And he goes, yeah, this is a general park. And once you walk through it, you will see it with the details that you want to put onto it. So it's kind of a co-creative space where the template was there. But the being moving into it would see it in the unique way that they wanted to see it. And I remember the more we stayed there, the more details came to me and the more kind of specific it was to my taste and his taste. So it's just so interesting how imaginative. It's almost like that's too small of a word for what this is. It's imagination writ large, right? And that just embraces so much.
I like the idea of that park as a kind of starter kit. Here you are. You don't have to start everything from scratch. You don't have to plant the grass and mow it. Here you are.
Right.
Just add a little trim. Add a few details. Make it your own. I mean, I think that's delightful, and I think that's actually fairly true to how these things sometimes operate. You know, Dawn, as I listen to you and your relations with Bob, I'm remembering a statement I heard when my dreams led me to study the Iroquois traditions of the Northeast. The famous Seneca Indian prophet Handsome Lake said, "The distance between the living and the departed is exactly as wide as the edge of a maple leaf." Well, you know, your experience just, it's not even as wide as the edge of a maple leaf. There's no distance at all. Mm. If we are open, if there's love and connection and a desire to do things together, I mean, there's no distances. There may be a difference of vibration or difference of intention, but the physical distance is insignificant and may not be a factor at all. So we're closer than the edge of a maple leaf. And of course, to those who follow their dreams, we're as close as an eyelid or a sleep shade, if you use such things. Any last thought you'd like to share with us, very briefly?
I guess just that, you know, I hope that everyone listening to this realizes that this is just an invitation to listen more deeply to ourselves. You know, we're talking about specific things, dreams, things, but really we're talking about inviting everyone on our planet, huh? To listen more deeply, to trust our inner experiences, and really to stay curious and creative about love and connection and consciousness, you know, even when there are no easy answers. If we open ourselves in a soft way.
That's lovely and very arousing. Mm. Thank you. We've been talking to Dawn Brunke. We'll be back really to say thank you and dream on after the break.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You've been listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest is Dawn Brunke. Her book is Talks with Bob. Please go and get it. You will be delighted, and you'll want to share it. And it will be so inspiring and confirming that our relations with our departed can continue in love and mutual benefit. Thank you so much for all you shared, Dawn, and thank you for what you've written.
Oh, thank you so much, Robert. I appreciate you.
All right, for everybody, may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.